Inc. versus Amazing Vapor LTD. Mr. Anderson, good morning to you.
Good morning. Justices. Tom Anderson, I've been before you several times in the past, but always representing somebody else, and I'm here pro se. This is a case which is a debt collection case, primarily against a company called Amazing Vapor LTD, in which then Manny Calderon as an individual and myself as an individual were also named as co-defendants. The general nature of the business was in the electronic cigarettes, vaping business, exploding kind of thing. Mr. Calderon came to me about that. I'll make it clear from the start, I was never Mr. Calderon's attorney for anything. I was never Mr. Grady's attorney for anything. So this is a business that started incorporated in March of 2014. This whole corporate existence was only 4 months worth of time. So it blew up big time right away. Because of its explosive start, there was a lot of business, there was a lot of inventory about it, but at the very beginning, Mr. Grady did some photography work to which, before he was paid, Mr. Calderon had a large objection to the amount of the indebtedness that never got resolved. Mr. Calderon was 60% owner of this corporation, not an LLC, a corporation. I was 40%. The lawsuit bringing against the Amazing Vapor for the debt collection was also then trying to apply to us individually through Section 21252C, which is a director obligations and liabilities for making distributions to shareholders when there are not sufficient assets to do so.
Is that an action in equity?
No. It's statute.
It's not equitable, really.
No. So then what happened was at the end of that hearing in county court then, the court, county court judge made a finding then that in order to prevent fraud and injustice, that there was a judgment then against me. Now, at that point there already was a default decree against Amazing Vapor and against Manny Calderon because he wasn't participating. I was a registered agent, but of course, as a minority holder, I had no authority to do anything to defend the company itself, and I didn't care at that point if I did, so those things happened on their own. I was only there at that trial representing myself, and I was the only defendant at that time that was still in question. And so then, therefore, what happened was the county court found that in the interest of to prevent fraud and injustice, out of the blue, I was then liable. So, of course, I appeal that to district court.
Let's back up a little bit out of the blue. What kind of action was this?
This was a collection action, a debt collection action.
Based
oral
on
contract.
Oral contract? Is that,
yes. Mr. Grady did photography work that for the company.
Okay. And the company, the corporation, was, or arguably not, but was indebted to him, yes or no?
Mr. Calderon objected a lot about the amount of the indebtedness.
And what did the county court do with decide with respect to the contract? There was a debt owing?
The court found by default judgment that he was entitled to his $2,400.
Okay. Okay, so take it from there. What was the reasoning of the county court?
The reasoning of the county court to find a judgment against me, because I'm the only one appealing this, okay, was on the basis that 252C was violated, but 252C is a statute about directors' obligations to shareholders.
Was it a finding of piercing the corporate veil, and 252C informs how commercial people should behave?
The piercing the corporate veil language didn't come up in county court. It only came up once it went to district court, and Judge Schatz then found that there should be a piercing of the corporate veil, And then he was basically at that point disregarding the entire...
Did the county court, in effect, pierce the corporate veil by using words like fraud and injustice?
In effect, yes.
Was there evidence that, or what was the evidence? Who hired Mr. Gray to do this photography?
The evidence was that I introduced Mr. Calderon to... Mr. Grady, and then they went from there and did the details with regard to the amount of the photography and the use of it from there.
Any written agreements?
No.
Any disclosures of who the parties were to Amazing Vapor or what Amazing Vapor as an entity was? Any discussion about them?
Yes, there were I guess conversations about it to a little bit of extent, because when I first introduced Manny Calderon to Tom Grady, you know, this is, you know, my partner is the word I used, but then again, it's a business partner, like a law partner. But Mr. Grady knew it was a corporation. He even sent the bill to the corporation.
And that evidence is all in the record?
Correct. And so therefore, the judge in the county court level, and it got affirmed, was misapplying the 252C, because that has to do with director's obligations to shareholders, of which Mr. Grady never was. But then Judge Schatz just took it a level further, plugging in this piercing of the corporate veil, citing cases, and there are a couple cases that are in the brief, because the piercing of the corporate veil argument goes towards the majority shareholder, to which I never was. I was a victim as well, and that's also in the record. I got hurt by a lot of dollars as well. These distributions that they're talking about were distributions that happened in the months of July and August. It was a very good business from when it started in April of 14, in May, in July, in August, it was going well. And then in September was when Mr. Calderon decided on his own to fold it up, take the inventory, of which there was still over $20,000 of inventory. There's lots of inventory value to pay Mr. Grady still. I didn't wind up the company. It would have been good if we did, but we didn't. He took the inventory. He took...
Tell us about the van.
Okay. The van was a vehicle, a cargo van. And he had a Mercedes...
Delivery van. Sorry.
Correct, yeah. And he had a Mercedes SUV also. And so then when he decided to move the location elsewhere, we decided we didn't need the van anymore at that point. He was going to do whatever deliveries there was going to be himself. And so therefore there was no need for the van. The van was purchased when the company began from funds that I borrowed from a client, and so therefore when the van got sold.
Was that evidence in the record that there was a lien against the van?
It was just it was an oral agreement.
Was that evidence in the record?
There's evidence that it was just a verbal loan. It was not like a title loan. It wasn't a financing company. It was just a client of mine who borrowed it from, happy to lend it.
Let me back up a little bit on a proposition of law that I think you said that you can pierce the veil, but you can only go to a majority shareholder. Is that what you said?
Correct.
And what's your authority for that?
That was there's the plastics, Christian versus Smith, 276 Nebraska, 867.
And then let me ask you another question, was to see if there's any factual dispute. There were funds on hand. There's value on hand.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
At the time that the business debt came due, if there was an enforceable oral contract. Is that right?
Correct.
And thereafter, there were distributions to the shareholders.
No. The distributions to the shareholders, like for instance in August of 2014, was just... Yeah, you could say distributions per se, but not very much, and there was still over $20,000 worth of assets. The distributions themselves...
Our affiliate was seeking $2,400.
Correct.
And the simpler question is, were there funds on hand or assets on hand that could have satisfied that creditor?
10 times over. There was only $2,500 or $2,500 of distributions made in August, but it wasn't until the next month, September, that the business blew up. So there were zero distributions made knowing that the business was about to end. Zero.
What is in the record about the business as to your your shareholder share and so forth. Is that all in the record?
Yes, sir. It's all in the record. It's 40% to me, 60% Manny Calderon. So I was helpless to do anything once there was a disagreement between he and I about what could be done. Thank you for your time. I know I've gone over my time, but I appreciate all of it.
Thank you very much. Mr. Roberts, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning, judges. I'm Justin Roberts with Lustgarten Roberts, and I represent the appellee, Thomas Grady Photography. May it please the court, I'm going to refer to appellant throughout the argument as Mr. Anderson, and then I'm going to try to refer to appellee as just Grady. I'm asking the court to affirm the lower court's ruling, and we'll address hopefully the following issues today. First of all,
I'd like to ask you, I want to be sure that I'm on the correct track on this. This began as a collection action on a contract?
It was filed under a number of theories. There was the theory of oral contract between an individual and Grady Photography. There was some allegations that there were improper distributions and that may create some liability from the shareholders or from the directors to the creditor, Grady.
Isn't that in the nature of an equitable action?
I think that's under pretty much under the statute, but I think I did plead a catch-all which just says to prevent fraud and injustice that the court should be able to disregard the corporate entity.
This is Broughton County Court, right?
It was.
Do you think the county court has general equity jurisdiction?
I think that they do have jurisdiction under 24517 because I don't think it was specifically excluded as something that they don't have jurisdiction over.
So it's the amount in controversy that you think governs this?
Well, I think that's part of it, and I think that's why it was brought in county court, but I think
that... It was brought as a contract?
It was brought as an oral contract, and then there were several other theories that...
It's the other theories that are worrying me. It's not the contract theory. It's the equity theories, because haven't we said county courts don't have general equity jurisdiction?
I'm not sure that issue wasn't raised by the court. It wasn't raised by a defendant Anderson.
Isn't that a matter of subject matter jurisdiction?
Yes, I believe it would be. If that's
is piercing a form of piercing the corporate veil a form of action, or is it in the nature of a remedy?
I think it is in the nature of remedy.
And then going back to Justice Castle's questions, is that an available outcome in county court? Is that somewhat like your question?
I think that's headed in the same direction.
Well, I'm not sure if it is an available outcome. I think that the court shouldn't be constrained by the evidence that they just happen to receive, and that they should be able to craft a remedy to address that wrong. And I guess
that,
I'm not.
That also sounds like an equitable principle of law.
Yes, I think other than the oral contract, which we have claimed between the two individuals, I think a lot of these are under equity. That the remainder of the theories are under equity.
All right, thank you.
Okay. So the question. One
so
of the questions.
How did the county court decide this, under the oral contract with an individual concept, or ultimately through some theory of piercing the corporate veil?
Well, I think they made a couple of different references to how they found it. I think, first of all, they found that there was, under the statutes, that the statutes just simply weren't followed for corporate governance, and that it was basically that the corporate veil should be pierced, and that to avoid fraud and inequity.
Well, let's say there's one path about piercing the corporate veil, and then there's another path about actions which would be founded on whether or not they're a form of action. 21252C. Mm-hmm. Are you aware of authority by which a creditor can rely on 21252C or its equivalent in terms of a model code by which the creditor can go directly against a director on the basis of that statute?
I don't believe the statutory scheme allows the allow standing for a creditor to directly assume the shoes of the corporation, you know, stand in the shoes of the corporation and sue the director.
So the conventional wisdom would be this is a remedy available to the corporation. The creditor sues the corporation, and then the corporation chases down a director. Would that be, that would be a conventional path. Is that correct?
I think for larger corporations and corporations that are still in existence, that right. That would be the
well,
typical
that's my
path.
Next question. In circumstances where there's winding down and there's only one creditor identified, are you aware of cases by which 21252 or its equivalent has been invoked to permit that creditor to go directly against a director?
I'm not aware of any cases that are on the books.
Thank you.
However, I would like to discuss the oral contract argument. First of all, I think the facts of the case show that indicate that my client Grady testified that he thought he was dealing with Anderson as an individual. I think Anderson, the testimony was, is he's a business attorney who's been practicing law in litigation business for 38 years. That he admitted on the record that he never explained that he was an agent for the corporation. He never explained that he was providing a referral to the corporation. He never had, he never explained to Mr. Grady that he didn't have any authority to contract or that he had to seek permission from somebody else. So I think
Mr. Anderson has indicated that the record would show that the bills were sent to a corporation. Do you think the record shows that, or were the bills sent to Amazing Vapor Limited?
I think the bill did indicate that it was to Amazing Vapor, but I don't think that proves that at the time the contract was formed.
Was it Amazing Vapor Corporation or Amazing Vapor?
It was Amazing Vapor. I think it was LTD is what he had on there, and I understand that the invoice that was March 27th of 2016 indicated Amazing Vapors. However, you know, at the time the contract was formed, which a lot of the testimony went to the time the contract was formed, and that after Mr. Grady had performed under that contract, there can be a third point in time where, you know, who do I send this bill to? Is this to some third party? Is it to you directly? And so there really isn't evidence that indicates that he knew from the beginning. In fact, all of the evidence points to the fact that Mr. Grady did not know that he was dealing with a corporate entity right off the bat. At the whole time, he was dealing with...
Did any of the defendants inform Mr. Grady that they were their form of business was corporate?
Well, yes, but that's an after-the-fact thing. So at the time the contract was formed...
At the time the debt was incurred.
Exactly. And so there's no question, Mr. Anderson brought up that there was some sort of question about whether the bill was contested or whether it was disputed. And I don't believe, if you look at the record, that there's any question about the bill at all. I mean, there was a lot of testimony that the parties understood the rates that were going to be billed. There were several, I would say, almost validating emails that occurred after the fact where there were promises that, okay, Mr. Grady, we're going to pay your bill. It's just that the checkbook, I can't find the checkbook, or it's locked in an office, or Mr. Anderson's gone. He's the guy who writes the checks. So I think after the fact, if there was any question about the amount, that was validated and that is not a legitimate dispute. Even back in, April or may under the facts.
What significance is it that evidently the in appealing from county to district there was no statement of errors filed?
Well, it just the there's a procedure that he's supposed to provide us with notice as to exactly what is the issue that's going to be appealed. And so there was no statement of errors filed, and I think that is a specific rule that you have to follow to take it from county court up to district court, and it just wasn't done.
And so therefore, what was the scope of the exercise for the district court sitting as an appellate court?
Well, the I think the district court at that point could only review it for plain error. And are there any further questions?
Well, I guess one last one. Subject matter jurisdiction would be within the scope of plain error, wouldn't it?
Yes, I believe it would.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. The next case of the day, then, is Brick Development versus CNBT2 LLC. Justice Stacy is recused from this matter.